Well, yes, that sound means it's time to talk to the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. And the voice of the Jayhawks is Mr. Brian Haney. Brian, how are you today?
Doing well, Wade. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I have not had a lot of sleep lately since you got me hooked on a TV show when we last spoke last week. So I so am looking forward to hearing what your next TV recommendation is for me coming up at the end of this segment. I can't wait. Brian, so let's jump into football and then we'll go to basketball. Well, I mean, that was a tough one against Texas Tech. There's no other way to describe it. I was listening to you and David on the broadcast. I was traveling and I was listening the first half, and you guys were trying to be, you know, upbeat and like, okay, the defense is keeping us around, or defense is keeping us in it. We've got a chance here to do something, and it just never materialized. The offense really couldn't get going, and Jason Bean had another tough game in Big 12 play.
Yeah, I think that sums it up really well. And if Jason Bean plays like the Jason Bean we saw at Duke or at Coastal Carolina, I think Kansas probably still loses, but it's in the, you know, 7 to 10 point range, honestly, which is saying a lot because we were down 41-0 at one point. But it was a situation where some bad throws early really snowballed on him, and he did not look like the same guy. He looked hesitant, tentative, not decisive in going downfield with the ball after he had one pick and three others that were nearly intercepted. There was one specific moment on a 3rd and 15 where he threw about 12 yards short of the sticks, and he just kind of looked like a quarterback that was trying not to make a mistake at that point. And that's not to be too down on Jason. I mean, this is his first go-round through league play, and though he's a junior by class, it's a different kind of animal going from North Texas to now playing against Iowa State and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and schools like that. And even Texas Tech, you know, though thought of by many to be the team right above us in the pecking order, I mean, that's a team that's one win away from being a bowl team. And so, you know, Kansas, you know, clearly was overmatched in a lot of spots there. But I think most notably, if the quarterback plays to his ability level, even conservatively speaking, it's probably a 14 to 17 point game, and we're playing or we're thinking much differently about Kansas heading into the second half of the season. Instead, he had a down game for the second straight week, and you know, you feel like, oh man, this is going to be a rough second half. Truth be told, this team's getting better, you know, in a lot of areas, but if there's one, you know, position of greatest importance that can tip the scales dramatically one way or another based on how well he plays, it's quarterback, especially when your quarterback has the ability on his best day to be your leading rusher in addition to your leading passer, and on his worst day has the ability to cough it up several times and get the offense stuck in the mud. And, you know, that's what we've seen the last 2 weeks, you know, with Iowa State prior to the bye being the previous game. And so I still have high hopes for Jason. I know Coach Leipold does. Heck, heading into the Texas Tech game, when I asked Coach Leipold, other than the offensive line, what position group, as in a bunch of players together at the same spot, have improved the most, he went straight to an individual and said, it's Jason Bean. He's getting better. He's understanding the offense. He's settling into his role. We just saw a guy that made some mistakes early and didn't exactly bounce back from it the way you'd want to see. But I think that, you know, Kansas is going to still have opportunities to win games. These next 2 weeks obviously look grueling against a couple of top 10 caliber teams in Oklahoma and at Oklahoma State. But if they can somehow just keep stringing, you know, positive days of practice together, and then in these two games, the next 2 weeks, stay healthy, have some individual moments where guys, you know, are flashing their potential to where you don't get demoralized and just down and out emotionally with a couple of ugly losses, then I think your last month offers up several opportunities that Kansas could possibly go out and surprise somebody. But no doubt, it's going to be a tough couple of weeks, and you certainly wish you were heading into this game with you know, a much bigger amount of momentum. But I will say this, as good as Oklahoma is at number 2 in the country and 7-0, I'm curious to see if Caleb Williams makes them a real puff your chest out, we're you know, the best team in the league by far, look out, here we go type team, because with Spencer Rattler before him, as good as Rattler was, 74% completion percentage and all that, five of their six wins, Wade, were by 7 points or less. I mean, they were eking them out. And believe me, I'm not sitting here as a Kansas guy expecting this one to be 7 points or less, but what I'm saying is they weren't exactly world beaters before the quarterback switch. They were winning, which is what good teams do, but they weren't, like, crushing teams. And so I'll be interested to see what the switch of quarterback does, you know, when they get deeper into their schedule against better teams again, if now they're starting to get a little of that number two in the country type swag factor going for them, because they didn't have it for 6 weeks. And, you know, I think a couple teams wish they would have caught them a little bit later in the schedule.
Coach Leipold knew when he took this job it was going to be a process. I mean, clearly when you come to Kansas after a winless season, it's going to take time. What's his spirits like right now? I mean, you get to talk to him each and every week. I know he's very disappointed because they had a bye, they had 2 weeks to prepare for a team that, at least on paper, that was probably the best chance for KU to win a game in conference.
Yeah, you know, that's a fair question. And yesterday at the Tuesday press conference, his tone and his words and his direction has not changed at all. He seemed a little softer spoken, just to size it up. I turned to David Lawrence and I said, bless his heart, man, he's going through, you know, the grind of what it's like in Kansas, where 9 of your 12 scheduled games are league teams, that 7 or 8 are going to bowls, and you're an underdog in all 9. And if you have, you know, a young team like Kansas does with 69 freshmen and sophomores, man, that can be a beatdown. And he to me sounded like a guy that was in the eye of the storm, just based on his tone. His message was still upbeat and all that. And then I saw him last night at Hawk Talk, and he's got his family in the room, and we're midweek, and we're, you know, all the, you know, implementation of the game plan with Oklahoma has been installed, and he sounded like his same normal self again. And so, you know, to answer your question honestly, and this is just an observation, I think he's adjusting to life in the Big 12 as the 10th out of 10 teams, you know, low rung on the ladder currently, and doing everything he can tirelessly in the hours when he's not preparing for an opponent to make recruiting headlines and waves that are going to get Kansas up off that 10th rung and climbing higher within this league. But it's tough when you've got, you know, that type of recent history to overcome, when you've got some of the roster disadvantages compared to the rest of the league that he's just having to deal with. But give him a couple of recruiting classes of his own guys, let him coach these guys up. I still think there's a chance at a win before the season's done in league play, and it's amazing what huge dividends that can pay in terms of, you know, just the morale in the locker room, the momentum for your program and recruiting, all of that. And sure, we all thought that there was a chance of that last Saturday, and it wound up not being close, but that doesn't mean that, you know, a West Virginia, TCU, K-State type game still to come, you know, on that home schedule couldn't end up flipping the direction of Kansas. So we're still optimistic that there's a, you know, big surprise coming down the stretch. But yeah, I think right now he's staying the course. He's that steady hand at the wheel that you would hope he would be. But he's only human too, and yeah, and it's a tough part of the year, man. I mean, they didn't do us any favors putting OU and OSU in back-to-back weeks, and so we'll see how Kansas navigates these next 2 games.
Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday on the Sports Ticket by our friends over at Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. So 11 a.m. kick coming up this weekend on Z96.3 Lake, OU at KU. Let's shift to basketball, where KU men's hoops, top five in the polls, AP poll number 3, and the coaches poll there in the top 5. And, you know, you and I have talked about this last couple of weeks, that this KU team might not be the most talented team that Bill Self's had, but it might be the deepest team he's had in quite some time, if maybe for his whole tenure when he's been at Kansas. And, you know, odds are he's not going to play 10 guys. Odds are his rotation, he's typically a 7-8-guy rotation coach. Most coaches I know, that's what they prefer, 7 or 8. Sometimes you can go 9 if getting some foul trouble. You like to have depth in case you have injuries or nowadays COVID or whatever it might be. This is really important coming up here in November, because a lot of times that's where you start to give these guys the opportunities, right, to see what they've got, how they play together, because come Big 12 time, that's when Coach Self usually trims that rotation. How important is it for these guys fighting for this playing time the next, well, I'd say, what, 5 weeks?
Yeah, and really the next 2 weeks in determining, are there two red shirts before the season even begins? Is there just one, and then you let it play out from there? Tough to say, man, but he said it yesterday at Big 12 Media Day that 1 through 14, talking about all the scholarship spots, it's maybe about as deep as he's ever had a club in terms of everybody having a chance to play. Like, usually there's a pretty sizable gap between your 8th and 9th player and what's at the end of the scholarship list in the 13th and 14th spots, because usually the kids at the end are so young and green and not ready. But now in this day and age of the transfer portal, I mean, you got four transfers coming in, guys like Jalen Coleman-Lance, who's 25, and Cam Martin, who's a senior transfer, Remy Martin, who's a senior transfer, no relation, and Joseph Yesufu, who, you know, is a guy that scored 23 a game in the last 9 games of the season for Drake last year, who isn't going to start, but he's going to be a real spark plug off the bench. And so suddenly, you know, you've got your entire bench are like veteran, accomplished, proven guys. I mean, Mitch Lightfoot's 42 years old, and he's in that second wave of players as well. I kid, he's only been around for 6 years. But the point is, you know, 6 through 10, if he does go 10, are all experienced, savvy, talented guys. And then 11, 12, 13, 14, you know, you could say on paper are the four freshmen coming in. I don't know if that's exactly true, because I think Clements and Adams have a chance to jump ahead of somebody in front of them in terms of those two freshman bigs. And Bobby Pettiford, you know, has a chance to be a difference maker. But I just don't know where those minutes are going to come. And so in a season where you don't have two true exhibition games, we'll only get one glimpse out in the open of these guys versus Emporia State on November the 3rd. And then it's on after that. It's Michigan State in Madison Square Garden. So they've got a lot to figure out here in the next couple of weeks. And then, as you said, you know, 3 or 4 weeks after that of rotational trimming, when guys are playing in some blowout games, but are they really going to be playing when the rubber meets the road in league play? Probably not. You know, he said yesterday he can go a 10-man rotation, but you're right to say that typically he'd be in the 8-man range and really hunker it down to 7 in those neck-and-neck games. And so we'll see. But maybe this is a Kansas team where our depth is a huge edge, you know, because of the ability to not lose much of anything when you go to that second string. I said this last week, and I'll say it again. I mean, to put it in perspective, Jalen Coleman-Lance was the number 10 scorer in the Big 12 last year. He might be the number 10 player on this team in terms of, like, wow, when he comes off the bench and all that. And that doesn't mean he's number 10 in terms of talent, just rotation. Honestly, he might be our best shooter, but there's not a starting spot for him. And I don't know yet if it's Harris or Yesufu or Coleman-Lance, the first guard off the bench, but he's definitely in that second wave, and he might be in the second half of the second wave. And a year ago, he was scoring 15 a game, you know, so that's kind of where we're at in terms of depth. But nice problem to have, and really excited to see how it all comes together here in the next few weeks.
No doubt. Let's change gears for a moment, and then we'll get to the off the wall. I'm interested in your thoughts on this. I wasn't really surprised by it being said, and Bob Huggins is a guy that sometimes is very blunt. I appreciate people that are blunt. But Big 12 basketball media days, what they're doing here earlier this week, but West Virginia men's basketball coach Bob Huggins said it's time for the major conferences to split from the other schools and create their own postseason tournament so they can gain control of the sport's most significant financial stream. He says, and I quote, "They're doing it in football. Why wouldn't they do it?" He said that at Big 12 Media Day. "The presidents, athletic directors that have all the juice, why wouldn't they do it? Makes no sense why they wouldn't do it. I think it's more why wouldn't they than why would they? And then the other people can have their own postseason tournament." Thoughts on those comments by Coach Huggins? That's I think a lot of people probably thought that for a while, actually. I think he's the first that I've heard as a coach has come out and bluntly put it out there.
Yeah, leave it to him to be the guy that says it, what others are thinking. And you know, it's a ways away, but it's not so far away that you can't be talking about it. And I'll be real interested to see, you know, what that looks like. And I think it would be disadvantageous to only have major conference schools break away and have their you know, exclusive postseason tournament, because I'm not sure that's exactly what he was suggesting, but part of the magic of March are the mid-major darlings.
Yes.
That rise up and make it to the Sweet 16. So you'd want to have, in whatever governing body you're forming your alliances with, you'd want to have inclusion there, because I think you'd lose something special without the Cinderella stories if it was just truly, you know, 65 teams or whatever that you deem to be power conference teams playing. And then, you know, I'm just listing off like Power 5 number teams. I'm not saying there's 65 in the tournament, but point is, I think that certainly there's a lot of speculation that that's coming down the pike sooner rather than later. The specifics of what it looks like remains to be seen, and you'd want to be careful with how you do it, because there is truly something, you know, magical about how they have it currently structured. I'd be okay with doing away with some of the six teams and beefing that up, but you got to have the mid-major schools in there. And I don't know how many, you know, Shocker fans you have in your listening audience in Glen Elder and Beloit, but, you know, certainly that's a program that put their stamp on March in recent years,
yeah,
making it to a Final Four and all that. And so you wouldn't want it to just be about, you know, major conferences. You wouldn't want it to just be an exclusive Pac-12, Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Big 12 thing. But I'm not sure he's pitching that either. But I think how it ultimately looks, you know, is going to be interesting. But, I mean, the NCAA March Madness deal with CBS, $1 billion deal.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of money to be gained here if you do it the right way, and what that ultimately looks like remains to be seen. But I'm excited that you know, we're hearing some of these conversations being had, because it certainly could lead to I got to be careful what I say here, but yeah, it could lead to a good future for everybody involved if the right leadership is in position making those calls.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question, or in this case, questions for you. Brian Haney, the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, brought to you, as always, by Anderson Insurance Agency there in Beloit. So last week, you recommended a TV show for me to watch on Netflix called Squid Game. I had no idea what it was, so I started to watch it. In the first 20, 30 minutes, I'm like, all right, maybe I should just pull the plug on this. Start out a little bit slow. But I stuck with it. Next thing I know, I'm hooked. That's what happens with binge-watching television. So I have three questions for Brian Haney about Squid Game. One, do you know how much Squid Game cost to make?
Man, I haven't done any of this research, no.
Good,
no.
Good. So I'm going to educate you on the show that you watched before me. All right. So, what do you think? Take a guess. How much you think Squid Game cost to make? It's in the millions of dollars. What do you think?
Man, I don't know. But how many episodes are you in?
I've watched them all. I'm done.
Oh my gosh!
Oh yeah.
I actually haven't watched the finale yet.
Are you serious?
I got to 8 on Sunday night, and
oh,
I'm still like saving it.
Oh.
It's been a busy week, but I've also been like not wanting to just waste it at the end of the day. I want to like really focus.
Oh.
But like, there's some pretty amazing. I don't want to give stuff away.
Yeah, we got to be careful. We don't want to ruin it for people.
But you know, there's one particular scene where there's like an explosion of glass, and they slow it down frame by frame as the people are turning away from the glass, and you see the shards in slow motion, just like carve into their faces. And I'm thinking, what? And again, this is super gory and probably not fit for family show like Wade Gerstner's sports show, but. The point is, I'm like, that's some of the most impressive, like, digital editing and slow-mo and all that. And so I thought, holy moly, that's got to be, you know, a super big expenditure. But I don't know, $100 million, $50
million? No, $21 million. $21
million. $21 million.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah, $21 million. That scene by itself that you're talking about cost $2.4 million. I don't know. I'm making that part up. But $21 million. Now, here's the better one. How much is Squid Game worth now? Now that it's caught fire and I hope 142 million people have watched the show or the series, how much do you think Squid Game's worth now? It cost 21 to make. How much do you think it's worth now?
You know, what I'm curious is, whatever the answer is,
it's a lot.
How do they monetize it from here?
I have no idea.
Like, obviously, you know, Netflix is getting their $14.99 a month or whatever, but I wish I knew the back behind the curtain,
yeah,
you know, talk on how Netflix monetizes what gets most clicks. But I mean, it apparently crushed Bridgerton as the number one most streamed Netflix show in the history of the platform.
Yes, it did.
Which is why I was hyping it last week on your show.
Sure.
I don't know. It's a 21 million. Let's say it's worth a billion now.
Yo, that's a good guess. 900 million. 900
wow.
million. That's insane.
That's incredible.
Yeah. All right. That's incredible. And the third of your off the wall questions, the last one is, of course, you haven't seen the last episode. I'm glad you said that because I assumed you had, and now I will try not to ruin anything for you for the final episode. Of the games that they have played, which you would have been through, what, five games? So there's one more game left,
yeah,
that you haven't watched. Of the five games you've watched that's within Squid Game, which one of those did you like the best? And it could be based on the strategy, maybe it's based on the intensity or the drama, or maybe just the game itself. What was the game you liked the best of the five you've seen so far in Squid Game? There was what? There was,
wow,
there was Red Light, Green Light, and then Tug of War, and Honeycomb, and then the glass one, and then the marbles. Which,
the marbles.
That was for me the best
one. Yeah, I didn't
like
the marbles.
You didn't like it?
Oh, you
like
that?
No, I thought I'll tell you why I liked it so much, because it had nothing to do with necessarily the game. It had to do with each of the, I don't want to give away too much here, but it had to do with each of the teams involved and the drama involved,
yeah,
with each of the teams. That's why it made it the best for me, because of that.
And that's why it was so heartbreaking for me.
Yes, it was
the
tough
game, without giving anything away. It's, yeah, like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. That's the stipulation.
Yeah.
So yeah, and for 90% of your listeners that haven't heard or,
yeah,
seen this,
we're trying,
you know,
not to ruin it.
Joe, they're like, what are these guys talking about?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a phenomenon for sure. I think to me the most intense one was the game five with the panes of glass,
uh-huh,
and choosing which pane. And for those that haven't seen it, you know, that there's a pane on the left and a pane on the right, one of which, if you jump on it, you're going to fall through and plummet to your death. The other is strong enough to support you. But you have a line of people 16 deep, and the guy first in line, you know, has to make about 20 educated guesses. And if he guesses wrong once, he's gone. And the person behind him can watch his path and have a little bit of an advantage. But ultimately, it's the people at the back of the line that are going to make it. So, yeah, that to me was the most intense, and you obviously saw some tactics along the way that were a little outside the box as well. But
yeah,
I'm excited for episode 9. I think I'll probably do it at some point this weekend once the hay's in the barn on the KULU game, but can't wait to see how it unfolds.
Well, you'll have to text me and let me know what you think of the final episode.
I will.
All right, sounds good.
Will.
Hey, man, as always, enjoy the conversation with you. Have a great call coming up this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. Have a good one.
You too. Take care. That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday on the Sports Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.